is Sober Reference. You're listening to A Sober Story, digestible conversations filled with evidence that you can do anything without picking up a drink. We share more cost-free resources on our website, www.soberreference.com, and hope you'll connect with us on social media. Search Sober Reference now and look for our logo. For more information about today's guest, visit our show notes. We hope you find this content valuable and leave feeling inspired to drink less, live more, and meet your potential. Enjoy.
Sonia, first, you have created something so beautiful in Everbloom, and I do want to talk to you about that. But first, I have to ask you about this breakup that you went through that was the catalyst for Everbloom, because all I know is that it was a surprise and you were sober at the time, but perhaps it like rattled your, oh my gosh, like, can I do this sobriety? So yeah, tell me some of the details. And then I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about how you actually got through that breakup without drinking.
Yeah. So I was with my husband for 18 years. I was 23 when we met, and we had started a business together. We sold the business. So we'd been through a lot, and selling the business is this like pivotal point for us. So I kind of felt like it was, oh my God, like I've achieved like all my dreams, like financially and like success, that whatever that success, I mean, done is kind of a strong word, but I was like ready to move on to other things. And so I did like all the things. I got sober about a year after we sold the business, because I knew if I had more time in the day that I would start drinking earlier and earlier. So I got sober and I did everything I ever wanted to do. I like took photography classes. I took jewelry making classes, anything you can think of. Like I was baking. I was just like anything. I was exercising, eating properly. And I was just feeling really good. And then in terms of like being productive, I was volunteering. I worked with the incarcerated and formerly incarcerated, teaching them entrepreneurship. I worked with victims of sex trafficking. And this was like, I don't know, it just opened me up in a way I didn't even know was possible, and only because I was sober. And so that was sort of what I was doing. And I knew my husband was struggling with his purpose. And I knew that like the definition of success was still the same for him. And it didn't necessarily bother me. We were two different people and that was fine. And if he wanted to go and start the next billion-dollar company, great. You know, but I would no longer be his like partner. I would maybe be like a sidekick or a team member, but I was done. And so I just didn't want to do anything that didn't have some sort of social impact. That was very clear. And so it was cute. It was like we would go out and our friends would be like, oh, it's so cute. You keep him grounded. And, you know, without you, he's just kind of in this world of like startups, which is a very white male dominated world. And so it was a really nice balance, I thought. And we had an amazing life. Like we were living in New York part time, we were living in rural Pennsylvania part time. And then he was struggling and we talked about it a lot and said, what do you want to do? And one morning he just got up and left. We were dealing with his issues as a couple. It wasn't a couple, like it wasn't an issue about us as a couple. And so he gave some pretty vague reasons, and but they hit really hard. He said, you know, you're happy with too little. And he named the things. And he said, you're happy with like your family. You're too happy with your nieces that you don't need as much social interaction. You're too happy with the amount of money we had that you have. You don't feel the need to make more. And when I finally had the chance to realize what he was saying, it was deep. It was deep. But that's the story. So he left and I woke up the next morning. There's no word for how I felt. I kind of knew he wasn't going to come back. Like I hoped he would, but I kind of knew that the things he had said were like not things you can really go back on. Like we had like a major value shift, divergence.
This, you've already hit something that feels like something I can totally relate to. And also this point where I'll digress and share. So yeah. When I got sober, which was almost 7 years ago now, I felt a value shift in myself and it created a value separation between me and my husband.
Yes.
And so I, for the past 5-6 years, have really been feeling like this interesting, like, well, we're living parallel lives really kindly, really comfortably, really in a very loving and supportive way, but kind of parallel lives of, like, we have our differences, we have kind of different values, but it's still working. Like, we're still working as a team. And at the same time, over the last 2 years, just based on kind of where we were in our tenure of a relationship and other things that weren't quite working right, we've been digging into these deeper questions of, and actually bringing out the answers, writing down on paper, what are your values? What is your definition of a successful marriage? What is your definition of a successful legacy, lifestyle, etc.? And seeing things on paper that I think we both intuitively realized were different, but seeing them on paper and then coming face to face with, like, okay, so they are different. The question that's being begged inside of me is, how important is that, that you're aligned on these things?
Yeah.
So you have your own experience with that. And I want you to continue with your story as you see fit, right? Like, tell the story and then perhaps ask, answer my question, or vice versa. But as you're speaking, this is what I'm kind of questioning, is, like, have you had a moment to reflect on that? So please continue.
Yeah, I would say the value that made it not important was how much I valued marriage. So I was never going to get divorced. And I thought that we were sort of on the same page about that. So anything that happened within the context of our relationship was going to be okay. We were going to figure it out because we were never getting divorced. It wasn't even on the table. And so, you know, that was, like, the biggest thing I was dealing with the fact that, you know, we had vows and blah, blah, and, like, we've been together so long. And then what it took was other people telling me, your values are not the same. And I hadn't seen it in that way. I hadn't seen that, like, you know, one person's into crypto and the other person's going to prison to teach entrepreneurship. I mean, we could come back together and we had a lot to talk about. I didn't necessarily think it was a value issue until my family pointed it out. And you know, our friends pointed it out. They said, like, even the way he handled it is a values issue, right? I never spoke or saw him again. He disappeared. He didn't check to see how I was doing, how my dogs are doing, knowing that I was an alcoholic and that this would be the trigger of all triggers. He was, like, done. He was just done. And so, yeah, I think that you can make a relationship work if you have different values. But I think that if someone doesn't respect those values, so that's the issue. Or if they feel like, well, you're too happy with, and so you're saying, he basically was saying, you're too introverted and you don't need as many friends. And that would be okay if he appreciated that about me, right? Like, oh, it's really nice. She doesn't, you know, need a ton of people around. She has to, like, take breaks when we hang out with people. But it wasn't like that. And I didn't see it. I just didn't see it. I loved him. And, you know, looking back, yeah, when I talked about things that were important to me, did he sort of, like, get a glazed look? Yeah. When we were out and someone asked me why I didn't drink, would he jump in and say, she just doesn't drink, and kind of preempt me saying I was sober? For sure. I started writing about my sobriety and I don't think he was very happy about it. He didn't read my articles. He didn't like any essay I wrote. And so, yeah. And then towards the end said something like, I can't socialize properly or be close to people because I can't drink. And I said, you can drink. I never said, so that's also a value, right? Like, I didn't have an issue with that. And I also think there's a distance from values. If one person is, their value is money at any cost, and the other person is like money to make a social impact, that is, it's a bridge too far, I think. And good for him that he figured it out, because I certainly wasn't going to figure it out.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. I'm hearing a couple of things, which is, and this is, I've literally only just learned this in the last 2 years of my marriage, which I wish I would have known it before, but, like, here we are. And it's why we're asking these uncomfortable, brave questions. And it is, first and foremost, why didn't we ask each other, what is your, like, concept of marriage? What does, like, getting married mean to you? Does it mean forever, no matter what? Or does it mean we grow together until we stop growing together? You know, like what to even ask that question, you know, I don't blame myself for not knowing those questions to ask, but I was shocked when I realized, oh my gosh, we've been together almost 10 years and we have not thought of this. So it's stuff like that, where it's like, there are these values in terms of lifestyle. Is health important to you? Is fitness important to you? Is money important to you? Is family important to you? Is legacy important to you? And then also the question of, you know, are we committed to the same definition of like what we're agreeing to be a part of together? Really important questions, big questions. And I think the reason why I ask this is, yes, like the journey I've been on, but also I talk to a lot of women, mostly just because I talk to a lot of people who identify with, and they get confused in their sobriety, particularly around, I've kind of changed, like, because my drinking has changed, I've also changed. And now I'm seeing things differently. And I'm seeing more differences. I'm learning whether it's like the differences that we accept and learn to appreciate, or it's, are we seeing differences that are causing and creating like resentment, or that are just being tolerated, or that are, you know, not really supported and celebrated. And to be, just to like be asking those questions, which is so uncomfortable. But I always like to say, like, one of the tenets that I live by is get to the truth before you get to the cheerleading. I cannot celebrate a successful marriage that is, you know, is successful in many ways, friendly, kind, loving, without making sure that we're having those like hard truth drawing out conversations, so that we know what we're really, you know, doing together. And only then with the truth can we celebrate. So thank you for kind of diving into that with me. The question that like begs to be asked, which is, okay, like reasonably, like the concept of your world and your future would have been shattered. So what was your experience in being in that storm? Like what happened to you mentally, physically, emotionally? And then talk to us about some of the lifelines that you were able to create or find to help you maintain your sobriety.
Yeah, back to the values thing too. People's values change. So in year one of the marriage, there, of course, like I don't believe in divorce, but by year 12, maybe someone's changing. And so, and same thing, sorry, about like, we didn't ever think we'd be business owners. And that changes how you look at things. It changes how you look at employees and employee rights. It changes how you look at taxes, and it changes you as a person. It's like watching, you know, someone go from being a Democrat to a Republican. Like, how does that happen? How? These are like fundamental social issues. How can you not feel this way anymore? But that is basically how I try. Well, also, I don't want to admit that I picked the wrong person, right? That's a really hard truth to say. Those red flags were there 18 years ago and you didn't see them. I will say that they were like red dots.
I hear you.
So what happened was, the next morning, I didn't sleep, I didn't eat, and I went for a walk on the Hudson in New York, and he left me with our two geriatric dogs, and I was walking them, and I thought, it wasn't like, I want to drink. It was that, but it was mostly, why am I sober? Like, what is, like, we didn't have kids because we loved each other so much. Like, we had built our life like around each other. And so I said, what's the point? Not that I got sober for him, but he was the person who benefited from the most, right? So that day, if I went home and drank a bottle of wine, it's only going to affect me. And so I got back to my apartment and thought, I just don't know how I'm going to do this. And for some reason, someone had mentioned like a non-12-step meeting, and I logged into the 8 a.m. meeting. And it was amazing. It was like so comforting, but it was about 220 people on the Zoom. And, you know, for a few weeks, it was great. I signed in every day at 8 o'clock, and I was listening to everyone's shares, and it gave me so much comfort. And then I realized, I'm not sharing. One, I'm not, you know, I'm introverted, and I'm not going to share in front of 200 people. And two, it's like, I always give, like, I defer people who are within the first 90 days. They should have the floor, and I'm not going to get in there whining about my husband when these people are going through it. I wasn't going through alcohol cravings. I was going through like an existential crisis of why I wasn't going to drink. And so I started to just think about it. I thought, what do I need? Like, what is it? Like, what do you want? And so what I had was I had two incredible sister-in-laws that had both been married to my brother, who was an alcoholic. So they sort of had a better understanding than the average person. They both had been divorced. They were divorced at different, you know, one had been 3 years divorced from him, the other had been like 15. And they called me like, I mean, they put their lives on hold to take care of me, basically. And I'm so lucky that I have that. But one, they're in Canada. And two, they don't know that how much a part of my sober journey this is. Like that getting through this is, it's a big part of my journey. And I have to learn from it. I have to, you know, I have to make something out of this. I can't just let it be this tragedy. And so I also had a friend who was going through a divorce, and that was great. And I said to myself, like, I just want to be with literally like eight other people going through some sort of major life transition. It doesn't have to be a divorce, and that we're all sort of at, we can be at the same stage, we can be at different stages, and they're trying to stay sober and they understand how hard this is. They understand that like feeling in my chest that I only knew how to fix with drugs and alcohol. They know that feeling. They know I can't get rid of it from deep breathing. They know I'm not going to meditate my way out of it. And all the advice people give is amazing, but it's like, you don't get it. My go-to is a substance. It's not myself. And so I kept going to the meetings, and then my sister-in-laws were like, you're a mess. You need to go. So I went, they said, go somewhere, do something. So I went on a emotional healing retreat in Costa Rica, and I was there. And the first day I didn't want to get out of bed. And then I just started like mapping out the idea of a small sobriety group. And if people had like, how would you figure out what they have in common and what challenges they're facing and which is the most important of those challenges? Because if you think about like the divorce, it was like, okay, so I'm facing like a breakup. I am facing major self-confidence and self-esteem issues. And then I have my sobriety issue. And so, you know, how am I going to figure out? And so I, you know, kind of came up with some surveys and thought, okay. And then there were just so many potential groups. So I got back, I started working on like a pitch deck just for fun. Cause I was used, like I was in an investing group with other women and I knew what a pitch deck was. So I started working on a pitch deck.
Oh my gosh. I love this. I'm such an entrepreneur at heart. So I know how hard it is. Like I've started multiple businesses, like solo entrepreneur sort of businesses, service businesses and stuff in different industries. And I've had like, you know, the relative success with it that it, you know, provides for my lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera. But I've never kind of created a thing with a team and, you know, all the different things that come along with that. So I've the utmost respect for how much courage and this new phrase that I'm learning, that a skill that I'm developing, frustration tolerance, it takes to start something. And then to come in and just to hear that what I hear you describing is what I know as Everbloom was created just from this internal soul speak of, I need this thing. Like your soul was saying, I need this thing. I need this thing.
Yeah.
And it was able to come through you in that way. I have a quick question. You mentioned that when you got sober, you had an awareness that part of your reason for getting sober perhaps was benefiting your relationship, benefiting your partnership with your husband. And then with that being taken away, it's kind of like a part of your foundation, your sobriety foundation being, you know, shattered or taken off. And so then things become a little bit wobbly. Were you aware that that was kind of one of your big whys, or did it surprise you when you were without it that it was so shaky? I think one of my fears is that I'll make a decision in my life, whether it is like start a new job or leave a relationship or a friendship or move to a different country, and that I won't realize how foundational the thing that I left behind was. And that's, you know, for me, I understand it's ego, my ego being like, I cannot do it alone. That's my basic underlying fear. You know, like I'm not good enough, I'm broken, whatever those like core fear-based beliefs are. But yeah, like you kind of speak to that of the rug being pulled out from under you and then being left with, okay, I have to really face this like core belief that that may or may not be supporting my sobriety. Was it surprising for you?
No. I mean, if someone said like your husband's going to divorce you, I know, like that was the only thing I would think that could have made me drink. I can't even now think of anything else except for like maybe like being the victim of a violent crime. And that's what this felt like. And I know it's not, but that's what it felt like. But I knew that we were each other's foundations. Like I knew that. And if anything, over time, it's shown me how much I did this for myself. And truly, had I been paying attention, I would have noticed maybe that it was having an effect. And I didn't care. Like I kept going. So I kept writing about sobriety. I kept growing and changing. And I didn't acquiesce and start another business together. And I'm sometimes surprised when I think, like, wow, no, you did this for yourself. And, honestly, I could have gone back to like realizing he thought I wasn't fun anymore. I thought about it for like a minute. I was like, could I drink? We'd be in Vegas doing shots off a stripper's navel. Like, you know what I mean? Can I go back to that? But it wasn't an option for me. It still isn't. And so, yeah, if anything, I think that I ignored whatever effect it was having on him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's another interesting thing that I have parallels in my own relationship around, which is at the beginning of my sobriety, I kind of kept my sobriety to myself in a sense that I didn't put any responsibility on my husband to change or support or ask questions or like anything. And that worked for a little while until certain things came up, like I was less social than I used to be, and what used to be our friend group slowly just became his friend group. And I started asking these questions like, are we still the same couple? Is this going to last longer now? Like, is this, am I still what he chose? Am I still what he wants? Is he still what I want? And then I did have, I mean, the most tempting thoughts for me were even to honestly, before I chose to stop drinking, I think the hardest barrier for me was, how is this going to change my relationship with the most important person in my life? Will I become something that he doesn't want? Or will I become something that I no longer want to be in this partnership around? Like it's such a fundamental through line for me and my sobriety of the most kind of like tempting reasons to drink again is like the way that it has affected me and him sexually, socially, et cetera. And I don't know if there is not a 100% right way. I think what I'm learning is that in my journey, I've had to realize that not including him in any responsibility or celebration or struggle or anything around my sobriety is not the right way for me or and for us. Like I've had to since then ask, I don't want alcohol in the house anymore unless there's a reason, like people are coming over or something like that. But like to open the fridge and see like 2 6-packs and 2 bottles of wine and a vodka, like when only one person in this house drinks, no, I don't want that anymore. I don't need to go through the mental gymnastics every time I open up the fridge. So I'm learning, like, where is it that I need to speak my needs and it be totally okay that I'm asking him to change. But what I'm hearing you say, kind of as you're speaking your story, is wondering, like, should I have questioned more, whether what I was doing affected him. And I think in my journey, what I've realized is I need to, yes, I acknowledge that what I'm doing is affecting him and the things that I'm asking him to do, like, should certainly affect his lifestyle. And at the same time, I deserve to speak those needs. And, like these are such fundamental needs for me. Like my sobriety is so important that like it's very valid that I have these needs and that I can expect that he would lovingly and in a supporting way, like, meet me there. Speaking again to like a lot of different relationship dynamics that come up in sobriety that are confronting, that are challenging, that can be disrupting and can also be very, strengthening. Yeah, so thank you for sharing that because it really does speak to one of my biggest fear-based thoughts in my mind is like, is there something that totally take me out? I don't know. We don't know. But you found a way through. Tell me a little bit about Everbloom and what it looks like today.
Yeah, so I kind of like conceptualized it like a piggy bank. So for me, right now, I'm a year out from that like horrible time. And so I can start like depositing into that piggy bank and like giving people a little bit of advice, a little bit of like encouragement. I have that now. Like I have that strength now. And then something happens and For example, he's coming to pick up his stuff next week. It's been a year. And I can withdraw from that piggy bank of my group and say, like, hey guys, I'm having a really hard time. Like, what am I going to do? So that's how I kind of look at it, is that it's a constant conversation. So it's not for the person who's struggling the most. It's kind of equally distributed. And so the way we usually start is we go around, they're small groups and, you know, around 10 or less. And we ask people, you know, what were some wins and what were some losses you had this week? And then we stop and everyone can give their feedback. And either they are like, oh my God, I think I'm going to be going through that soon, or they've been through it and they have some tip. And so that to me is great. And that was the issue with the larger meetings, is I needed feedback. I didn't need to vent to a Zoom of 200 people. I desperately needed someone to say, like, I hear you and this sucks and that's okay. And you're going to be okay. And many, you know, I went through it, or I know someone who went through it. You're going to be okay. And so I think that's where this came from. So in my head, I'm like, sometimes I'm in the meeting and I think it's like July 2022 and I'm, you know, sharing, like, what would I say? And what would I want to hear back? And that is what we're achieving in those groups, what I would have said and what I would have wanted to hear back. So some vulnerable sharing and some really thoughtful advice.
Is there, just out of curiosity, is there any requirement on length of sobriety or anything like that for people to join?
No. So probably right now, and I think it probably has something to do with the new year, our most well attended, like our big, our groups that we have the most of, is the first 90 days. And so, cause I feel like that's just like a group on its own. Like that is a hell all of its own. And so it's real, I feel it's really important that they kind of like stick together. It's not a time to, like, you know, talk about how to eat better or, you know, work on childhood trauma.
Gorgeous. Yeah. So I see now the reasoning for groups is that so you can be placed in a cohort of people who are going through similar or in similar kind of seasons of their journey within sobriety, and then that perhaps opening them up to different seasons in their life, right? The first 90 days is like, how do I not drink today? How do I do this for the first time, that for the first time, racing thoughts, triggers, all that stuff. And then, yeah, as you come into your 2, 3, 4, 5, now you're like, oh, I'm a different person. Maybe I want to start a business. Year 6, 7, 8. Oh, I'm a different person. Maybe I need a totally new group of friends. You know, there's all these beautiful things that are available to us and that open up to us as we continue sobriety. So I really love that you've kind of given each group the space that they deserve to be where they're at, and to just be like, yeah, let's focus on this phase right now. Like, this deserves its own space and attention and love and nourishment. And then just out of curiosity too, like, are you yourself like a member of a group, or do you mainly just facilitate?
I mainly facilitate now. I talk about sobriety and recovery all day, every day. And so sometimes I feel like I'm in like one 24-hour meeting, but I think eventually I would join a group. I need that too. And so, yeah, I think eventually, but also, you know, I have other facilitators that also kind of act as a group. And so, yeah, I definitely, and sometimes if I'm in the group, I'm like, I feel like I'm part of the group too, if that makes sense, even though I'm facilitating.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even just like sitting and listening can be so healing and affirming for a person, if they're not the one that's like sharing and being the storyteller. I totally understand that. I would love to hear, as we wrap this segment up, a couple of things that you're grateful for. I mean, what a wild ride, a really tough ride. Also, I mean, just immense respect, and I have so much like gratitude for you, honestly, just seeing how it's hard to believe that it's only been a year and that you've created this really beautiful thing from it. I mean, it just really speaks to, of course, like your humanity of going through something so challenging and being what you know, quoted as like a total mess. And to some extent, or perhaps a great amount of extent, to doing that in a graceful and dignified way, in which you, sounds like you had, what I'm hearing from you, the value of, you know, social impact as something to guide you in your ability to kind of make it through this with, you know, something to offer with perhaps greater strength for yourself or in community. If you could share with us a couple of things that you're grateful for, just like from this journey, what would you share?
So I had always come from like a very like tough love background. My husband was very tough love. Like if I was having a problem, it was like the solution is to work harder. And I learned how to lean on people. I'd always been sort of the one without any problems, especially since I got sober, but I even covered my drinking up really well. So I feel like it was almost significant to my sister-in-laws to be able to help me. And they would hear something here. They would read something in a text that would like tip them off that I wasn't doing well. Like even something, it would be like very vague. And the phone would ring 5 minutes later and be like, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And I mean, there's so much crying. There was so much swearing. And it's so nice to be able to lean on people. I'm like, I get emotional because now it's like part of who I am. And when something big happens, I immediately text them. I don't think, oh, am I bothering them? Or are they busy doing something else? So yeah, I'm so grateful that I unlearned how to be that strong. And I learned how to really lean. And this is sort of what Everbloom is about, right? Is I've learned how to like leverage is a weird word, but like leverage my support system and really let it, I can't like, no one just wants to get support. They want to give it. Such a like, it's such a beautiful thing to learn to be sad and needy. Yeah.
So vulnerable and trusting and honest. Yeah, very difficult to do, to like be that way with your freaking self first and foremost, and then to do that in a group of people. So that's something that I feel like I'm constantly working on, is like, how do I be more honest with myself, more open, more vulnerable, you know, just shedding the shame, shedding all those conditioned beliefs. And you are such a beautiful example of that. Thank you so, so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Thanks for listening to Sober Reference. We hope you found this content valuable and are leaving feeling inspired to drink less, live more, and meet your potential. You can find more cost-free resources on our website, www.soberreference.com. We hope that you'll connect with us on social media, search Sober Reference now, and look for our logo. Great job taking in sober positive content today. Until next time, this is Sober Reference, and we are so glad that you're here.